The Rebbe says that if we ask ourselves why Chazal were Kaveya and Yom Tov called Purim, there are actually two different things that we are celebrating in Purim. One is we are celebrating, of course, the Nes of the Hatzalah of Am Yisrael, that we were in a matzah where we would have been eradicated, we would have been destroyed, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a Yeshua, so we're grateful that our lives were saved. But there's another aspect of Purim that we're celebrating as well, and that is Purim represents the downfall and the destruction of the Kayach of Amalek. So in Purim, there is both what is called Pursume Nisa, which is publicizing the Nes of Hatzalah, but also a celebration of the downfall of Amalek. And I saw in that, there was a Mishpacha Magdi, I've even never heard this before. There's something called an Amalek Kugel. Have you ever heard of that? What's an Amalek Kugel? It's four different kugels. In Yiddish, Amalek, so the ayin is apple kugel, and the mem is male kugel, also the flower kugel, and the lamed is lupshin kugel, and the kug is a kartoffel kugel, which is a potato kugel. So Chassidim of a minute, they make four kugels for Parshas Sofer, and it's called Amalek kugel, and by eating the kugel, they're mekayim, eradicating Amalek. They consume Amalek in that way. So there's actually a recipe for what called Amalek kugel. But being as made, you know, the Shabbos before Purim is Parshas Sochar. And Megillah itself is a fulfillment of remembering Amalek. That's why we're eradicating Amalek. That's why we make noise with Haman. We stand by Haman, etc. So I want to talk about what this could mean in terms of our own Avodas Hashem, in terms of the Hashkafa that we have on these two aspects. So first of all, like this, all of the Svarim tell us that Amalek is not just an external enemy that tries to destroy us, but rather our vulnerability to Amalek is because we have certain aspects of Amalek within our own panemius. There's only when there's an Amalek, a kayach of Amalek within our personalities, that makes us vulnerable to the kayach of Amalek that tries to destroy us mibachutz. So when we talk about mechias Amalek, erasing Amalek, it doesn't mean, you know, you look for an Amalekite to shoot him down. That's a question if you read such a mitzvah. But it does mean I try to work on my own inner Amalek and try to eradicate that Amalek. So when you look at the perspective of Mechias Amalek, the question we ask ourselves is, what is the aspect of Amalek within us that we try to eradicate? Like, what is the Achilles heel? What is the spiritual weakness? So the emes is, in terms of Amalek, Chazal have taught us there are two pigamim that are that give us shayrus, that are the root of the kayach of Amalek. Pigam number one goes all the way back to the very first time Amalek attacked us. The very first time that Amalek attacked us, after we left Mitzrayim, they were the very first nation, was in a place that was called Rephidim. Right? Rephidim is the place. But what is Rephidim? Rephidim, Chazal identify, is also an acronym. It's an abbreviation. Rafu Yedeyem Minatayim. Amalek attacked us. Literally, this phrase means our hands were weak from Tayyar. Now, you have to understand, this is an idiomatic expression. The concept is, when you care about something very much, you hold it very tight. But if you're crossing Shimon HaTzadik with your baby, and you're holding your baby, you know, you're going to hold the baby fairly tight. You don't want to drop the baby. Right? When you don't care about something, yeah, I'm going to lose it. No, not for me. So Rafi Yedeyam in Atayra is a certain attitude in which even if a person keeps mitzvahs, they don't do so with enthusiasm, they do so because it's a burden, they do so without geschmack, without passion. It's called rifyan, weakness, looseness. So the sheirish of Amalek comes when we do mitzvahs. It's not referring to people who don't do mitzvahs. We do mitzvahs. But we do mitzvahs without enthusiasm, without geschmack, without simcha. That's called rifyan yadayim. Rav Tzadok takes it even further. He looks at another word in the pasuk, that's merabes. In Parshas Kisetze, which is the Kriya Sefer of Parshas Zohar, the lashon of the Torah is, Amalek is asher korcha baderech. Now the taich of korcha is they encountered you. But Rashi translates korcha, they made you cold. Now the way Rashi explains it, based on a medrash, is that when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, they were like a boiling, scalding hot bath. Every nation of the world was afraid of them. Amalek was the first nation that jumped into the bath. They got burnt, but they made the bath cooler for everybody else. Other nations thought you could not possibly attack Klal Yisrael. Yetzias Mitzrayim, Esher Makos. Amalek said, it can be done. We lost, but maybe the next guy could win. That's how Rashi learns Ashokar. But Rav Tzadok takes the same etymology, but gives it a different twist. Again, Kortha means cold, but Amalek is the Sheirish of coldness in Avodah Zarah. Kriras Halei. Now, this is an interesting idea, because what Rav Tzadok is suggesting is that the Rishus of Amalek is not like the wild fanatic that wants to kill them. It's very different. Amalek is the cool, collected cynic who says nothing's really important in life. Everything is relative. You know, you have this sheet, that sheet. In other words, it's a different view of evil. The evil of Amalek is not the evil of the fanatic who believes in something, but it's the person who nothing is really that important. That's why the Svarim tell us the gematria of Amalek is the same as Suffolk. Is that right? I'm not sure that's right. Add up the numbers here. Okay, Amalek is 70, and 40 is 110, and 30 is 140, 240, right? So what is Suffolk? 60 and 80 is 140. You come back, yeah, but very good. Right? Because Suffolk is the idea that nothing in life really matters. Everything is a question. Right? So that's Amalek. Amalek is coldness of the heart. Amalek is Rafim. And this, we have to be right at in our own lives, is a big misayim that even a very firm person can have. That person's firm, we do mitzvahs. But sometimes we do mitzvahs and Hashem alumada. It was the habit, this is what we do. You know, this is kind of what you do. But we sometimes look at mitzvahs as a burden. In fact, somebody once said that for many people, 613 mitzvahs are really 613 problems that you have to navigate around in order to live our lives. Like a person might say, the ikker thing in my life is my job, is my house, is my what's it? Never, I have mitzvahs. I got the Shabbos, I got Kashrus, so I gotta figure out a way to work around Shabbos and Kashrus and learning to live my life. That's called coldness. That means that's not really what matters to you. Right? So that's the first Shemesh of Amalek. That's called Kriras Halev. Coldness of the heart. The second Shemesh of Amalek is the hatred that exists among Jewish people. Sinas Chinam. Now, what's the proof for that? In other words, I gave you a proof that Kriras Halev is a Shemesh of Amalek, both from the word Rechidim and the word Asher Karcha. But where do you see Sinas Chinam is a Shairish of Amalek? So here, the Raya could be from a Chazal. Chazal point out that we find that Amalek will only be destroyed by the children of Rachel and not the children of Leah. And this is a very fascinating pattern, that you see that all Nitzachin over Amalek is from Rachel and not from Leah. Let's trace this. Who was in charge of the army at the very first encounter with Amalek in the Midbar? It was Yehoshua ben Nun. What tribe is Yehoshua ben Nun from? Shevet Ephraim. Ephraim from Yosef? Rachel. Who was the only king that was given the command to fight against Amalek, although he didn't carry it out successfully? Shaul HaMelech. David HaMelech was not given the command to fight Amalek. Shaul HaMelech, who comes from Binyamin. Mordechai and Esther are descendants of Shaul. And in fact, Chazal tell us that because Shaul did not finish the mitzvah of destroying Amalek, Mordechai and Esther had to rectify the misaking what Shaul failed to carry out. Furthermore, before Mashiach ben David comes, there will actually be an earlier Mashiach, very enigmatic, we don't know a lot about it, But this earlier Mashiach is said to be Mashiach ben Yosef. And the tachlis of Mashiach ben Yosef is to eradicate Amalek, to pave the way for Mashiach ben David. And this is all based on the idea that all Mapala of Amalek comes only Mizera Rachel. Sometimes Yosef, sometimes Binyamin. And it doesn't come from Zera Leah. What is the unique segula of Rachel Imenu? It was the Avas Chinam, the unconditional love she showed for Leah when she was willing to give up the most precious thing. She was willing to give up her connection, her initial connection to Yaakov Avinu, in order to spare Leah her busha, her chlima. It was an act of selfless love. What does that tell me? Amalek can be defeated only by the kayach of Abbas Yisrael. And conversely, what that means is, when there's sinas chlima, we are vulnerable to Amalek. So, what we've established, hopefully, is three ideas here. Number one, Purim is about, in part, Mechias Amalek. Number two, Mechias Amalek is not just an external enemy, but it refers to an Amalek within us. Number three, the Sheirish of the Amalek within us can be from complacency and lack of passion in Torah, that's Rafi Yudayim in a Torah. And number four, Sinas Chinam and lack of Avas Yisrael. Now, this explains an interesting thing. If Purim represents the victory over Amalek, this is why Chazal and Misakim, Mitzvos on Purim, that represent a victory over that inner Amalek. For example, the second one is very obvious. If the Pagam of Amalek is Sinas Chinam, that is why Chazal were Misakin on Purim, mitzvos that involve unity in Avas Yisrael. Namely, Mishloach Manos, which the purpose is to create friendship and caring, and Matanos Liev Yonim, which express compassion and mercy for those who are suffering. See? Now, is there anything on Purim that's Mechuvan, Keneged, Rafu Yedeya Minatayra, Kriris Alev? So that's a little less obvious, but we see this as well. Chazal say in Maseches Sukkah that Purim, or Maseches Megillah rather, that Purim was a day that the Jewish people re-accepted the Torah. Why did they have to re-accept the Torah? Because the first time they got the Torah, Hashem held a mountain over our heads and said, accept it or I'll crush you. We accepted the Torah. We accepted the Torah by compulsion, by duress. On Purim, we accepted out of love what we had previously done out of fear. Now, if you think about it, the difference between doing something out of love and doing something out of fear is the enthusiasm and passion that you bring to a task. If you're doing something only because you were forced to do it, maybe you'll do it, but you know, you're not going to do it with enthusiasm, with joy, with happiness. When you do it out of love, then you enjoy everything that you're doing. So here's the point. Chazal see Amalek gets defeated. We know that Amalek is within us if we have Rifyon Yadayim, Kriris Alev, and Sinas Chinam. So we celebrate the downfall of Amalek by eradicating Sinas Chinam and by accepting the Torah out of love, which is a tikkun for Rifyon Yadayim in that Torah. Right? So you see that the very mitzvos of Purim correspond to be masaking the pegamim of Amalek. Well, when you say Amalek is still around, what do you mean by that?
We still have.
We have enemies.
I mean, no, besides,
and
I'm saying we're
beyond
whatever.
Well, yeah, you know, the, I mean, Lachara, the answer basically is that you know, enemies get defeated but not totally destroyed. We need to say that Purim was a great siman of his iris, just like Matan Torah. Right after Matan Torah, there was an ego. It's a great siman of spiritual closeness, and then you lose it. Then you lose it. And we have these zamanim to give us this iris, so we can come back to it again. By the way, I want to just add to one thing that you see these two pagamim existed in Purim itself. In other words, you see that the yidden at the time of Purim, and before the Nes, had these pagamim that made them vulnerable to Haman, and you see both of them. By the way, I mean, everyone knows the chronology here, that the story of Purim is happening within the 70 years between the Chorban Bayis Rishain and the building of the Bayis Sheni, and the Jews are in Golos. And at this point, although Babylonia had destroyed the Chorban, at this point Paras, Persia, had conquered Babylonia, and Mordechai and the many Jews find themselves in Persia, and whatever it is, Ahasuerus rules over everything, 127 Medinos and the like. Now, where do you find these two pagamim? So here's one point. If you remember, when Haman first makes his case that Ahasuerus ought to kill the Jews, even though he doesn't even identify them as the Jews, he says, Yeshnai am echad, there is one nation, mefozar u'meforad bein ha'amim, that is scattered and separated among the nations. Now, here's a very important cloud. I'm sure you've heard this before. It's Yadua, and I'll talk about this more a little later, that the name of Hashem is not mentioned in Megillah Esther. God is concealed. But the Zayar says, whenever the word HaMelech appears, it's a remez to Hashem, Melech Malchei Melech. Which means, whenever you see the word Melech, there's a literal meaning, which is Ahasuerus, and a deeper meaning, which is Hashem. Similarly, when Haman is a person, but Haman also represents the Kayach of HaMelech. So, when the Pasuk says, Vayaymer Haman LaMelech, two interpretations. Lower interpretation, flesh and blood Haman says the flesh and blood Ahasuerus. Higher interpretation, the Kayach of HaMelech is Makatreg to the Melech Malchei HaMelech. So every single part of Haman's speech has to be retranslated into that different language. So when Haman says to the human Ahasuerus, they're Mefuzer Meforad, he means because they're scattered in so many places, they're not organized, and they're not able to fight you, so you could easily defeat them. But what does it mean when the Kayach of Amalek is Makatred in Shemayim? Mefozar Meforad Sinas Chinam. And that's why the first thing Esther says to Mordechai, Lech Kenos Eskola Yehudim. Gather all the Jews together. Amalek is winning because we're Mefozer Meforad. It's only in Achdus that we could be Menasim. Right, so that's proof, in other words, textually, that there was an Avla of Sinas Chinam at that time. Where do you see Rifyan Yedeim Menatayra? So this is again a bit more subtle. But you see it in the following way. Gavaldiga word from the Spasenis. The Gemara quotes a brisa where the Talmidim of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai asked Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, why were the Jews of that door Chayav Misa? Why did they deserve to be destroyed? So the first answer he gave them is because they enjoyed the Seuda. They participated in the big party of Ahasuerus. They were nanu misuda, and therefore they were chayav misa. Now, the question is very obvious. I mean, what did they wrong? They ate treif. They drank yayin nesach. Good. It's a serious avera. But you're not chayav misa for that. For eating treif, you don't deserve. You don't die. So the door dies because they ate non-kosher food. Says the Sfas Emes, the Gavalda Gavort. The Gemara doesn't say they ate from the meal. The Gemara says they got pleasure from the meal. What is that adding? Do you remember why Ahasuerus made his seudah at that time. Chazal have a complicated calculation. I won't go over all the numbers here. But Chazal basically say, Ahasuerus had calculated the 70 years of exile. He was mistaken. But he had concluded in the third year of his reign, the 70 years of Golos were up. And if Hashem did not redeem the Jewish people after the 70 years, as he said he would, that means there would be no Geulah. Nenu Misa'uda means the Jewish people had pleasure in the fact that Baruch Hashem, we don't need a Beis HaMikdash, we don't need Eretz Yisrael. There's the Knesset of the Sfas Emes is not that the Avera was they ate. The Knesset of the Sfas Emes was they had pleasure in what Ahasuerus was trying to do. And that's exactly coldness of heart. You're not mishtaikek for a Beis HaMikdash, for Eretz Yisrael, for the ability to do mitzvahs. You're happy with what you have in Golos. And that's Rifi Nidayim. So the point basically is that the two Shirashim of Amalek correspond exactly to what existed in that dorm itself. And of course we have to ask ourselves to what degree we have those begotten that we try to work on. Right? So this is the idea of Purim as an eradication of Amalek. Right? Mechias Amalek. By the way, just a little halachic aside, let me just mention that I don't know what the minhag is in Eretz Yisrael. You know, it's very interesting. In the States, women are very, very machmir to hear Parsha Zohar. Parsha Zohar is the only Kriyas HaTorah that's min HaTorah. So they have special minyanim, extra things for minyanim and the like. But the truth of the matter is, the Sefer Achinuch actually says women are exempt from the mitzvah of Parsha Zohar because the Sefer Achinuch connects the mitzvah of remembering Amalek with the mitzvah of eradicating Amalek. And eradicating Amalek is milchama, and women are exempt from milchama, so they're exempt. So it's interesting that according to the Chinuch, women are punctured from Parshas Zohar. And in Europe, it was actually a common minhag that women did not bedavka, unless they were going to shul anyway. But they didn't make a special effort for Parshas Zohar. But in America, we have like these five Kriyas HaTorahs. I don't know what they do. Do they do that here too? They have special.
In England, they do.
But I have a feeling in Eretz Yisrael it's not emphasized as much, and that would be in reliance on the Sefer Achinuch. So there is a good marker for that. In fact, I should mention another thing too, just for your own knowledge, in case you need this. Even the shittas that say Parsha Zohar is min HaTorah for women, they say it doesn't necessarily have to be a Sefer Torah and a minyan. So those shittas say you could be Makaye the Da'oraisa of Parsha Zohar by reading it from a Chumash by yourself. In other words, the minyan and the Kriyas HaTorah is not part of the Doraisa mitzvah. So there are, you know, different shitas that you can follow. Okay. So this is what we call theme one of Purim, a celebration of the downfall of Amalek. Let me talk a little bit about theme two of Purim. And theme two of Purim is, of course, Pursume Nisa, the gratitude for the Hatzalah of Am Yisrael. Now here, Rav Huttner has a very interesting thought. Rav Huttner says, the Gemara in Megillah asks Akasha, how come we don't say Hallel on Purim? Right? We say Hallel on Chanukah, the Shvarach who saved us from an enemy. Why don't I say Hallel on Purim? The Gemara asks Akasha. The Gemara gives three terutzim why I don't say Hallel. One teretz is that we don't say Hallel on miracles that happen in Chutz Laretz. What about Pesach? That's on the way to Eretz Yisrael, but you don't say Hallel on Chutz Laretz, nice. Another teretz is we really weren't out of the woods, because even after the Purim story, we are still slaves to Ahasuerus, so maybe the next day there'd be another Haman. It's not a Geulah Shleima. But the third reason is the main reason the Shulchan Aruch brings. We don't say Hallel on Purim because Kriyas HaMegillah itself is our fulfillment of praising Hashem for the miracle. Kriyas HaMegillah itself is the Hallel. Based on this, the Me'iri says very interesting halacha. Let's say you got stranded on a desert island and you took your sitter with you. You didn't take your Megillah with you. The Me'iri paskens you actually say hallel with the bracha in Purim. Because the only reason you don't say hallel is because Megillah takes the place of hallel. If you don't have Megillah, you say hallel. But we don't pass it that way. The Mishnah Berurah says no. Not only does Megillah take the place of hallel, but Megillah is the only type of hallel you do on Purim. Regular hallel is no good. So Rav Huttner says, that doesn't make sense. Why would a surrogate or a substitute for hallel be better than the real hallel? It's one thing to say, I'm yaitse hallel through Megillah, but hallel itself is no good. So Rav Huttner says, that's exactly right. Because the nature of the hallel you recite has to correspond to the nature of the miracle for which you're saying hallel. We have two types of miracles. We have the miracles that are open and obvious and revealed. Yetzias Mitzrayim, Ten Makos. A Nes Nigla requires a Hallel Nigla. Open miracles require open Hallels. But Purim is exactly the opposite. Purim represents the whole concept of seeing the hand of God even when everything is concealed. There is nothing important, pointed out many times, there is nothing in the Purim story that could not be explained in a natural way if you didn't have eyes of Emunah. What? Achashverosh kills Vashti? Well, kings did that. Esther gets chosen as queen? Well, somebody had to get the job. And besides, keep in mind, you can certainly understand this, when Esther was chosen as queen, this was not perceived as some great celebration, like sometimes they have in day schools, they have celebrations, Queen Esther wins a beauty contest. I mean, you have to understand what a tragedy this was. I mean, you can understand this. The wife of the Gadol Hador forcibly seized and brought into the harem of a Russian. This was an awful, awful tragedy. And one can only imagine what is going through their minds. Why is this happening? And only years later, Haman becomes Bixen HaMelech, wants to kill the Jews, and Mordechai overhears Bixen Beseres. Like, everything fits. But everything is totally B'derech HaTeva. So Rav Huttner says, Purim represents what's called the hidden miracles of life. That's why Esther is concealment. So Rav Huttner's point is, just as open miracles require open hallels, hidden miracles require hidden hallels. So we praise Hashem not in an open hallel, but we praise Hashem by reading the Megillah that doesn't even mention HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. Right? That's the nature of Purim. So the importance of Purim is a very, and that's why, of course, that's why Purim is the only miracle, the only holiday that occurred in Golus. Because Golus, above all, is Hester Purim. And the important insight of Purim is to learn to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu not only in the miraculous, but to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the day-to-day struggles we have in life. Right? That's the greatness of Purim. It's one thing to say, once in a while Hashem does something amazing. But it's actually a deeper and higher matrikin to see in the everyday miracles of life the Hashgacha of Hashem, the Yad of Hashem. And that is why Purim, we wear masks and we disguise ourselves. Because what is a mask? A mask reminds us that what you see is not the inner reality. There's a reality that's deeper than what you see. In the world, we see a world of Eilam Kemin Hagai Nayek. But it's only a mask. There is a mask that's covering up a deeper inner reality. And that's the idea of Purim. And this is the meaning of an often misunderstood Maimer Chazal. Chazal say all of the Yamim Tovim, when Mashiach comes, are going to be nullified except for the Yom Tov of Purim. Now, if you take that literally, you really have a kasha. If it means we're not going to have Pesach, I mean, that's difficult. The Rambam says one of the 13 principles of the Torah is the mitzvahs are not going to be changed. We're going to have Pesach. We're going to have Rosh Hashanah. Right? How can you say a Yom Tov is going to be batal? But rather, the inner meaning is that the central message of the Yom Tov is going to be subordinate to Purim. Why is that so? Because the central message of most Yom Tovim shows us how HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervenes in miraculous ways at certain special times. Purim teaches us that even daily life is governed by Hashgacha Pratis. We don't see it most of the time. When Moshiach comes, we will understand. So it basically says the notion of extraordinary intervention will become a less important idea when you see Hashgacha Pratis every single second of your life. And that's what it means that Purim will be the eternal message. Because Purim tells us, see God in the ordinary. Understand that this world is a mess. And this is the notion of pursuing Nisa, to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu even in the consumed. Now, we can take this to one further element. You know, one of the if you have, well, probably you don't have boys who are old enough for drinking age, but you know, one of the most beloved laws of Purim that boys especially like is the din that a person is obligated to drink on Purim till they do not know the difference between blessed is Baruch Mordechai, blessed is Mordechai, and Orur Hama. Now, first of all, there's a very big machlokas, even if we paskim like that statement. But let me just tell you what the Gemara says. After the Gemara says a person must drink on Purim until they don't know the difference between Baruch Hama and Baruch Mordechai and Orur Hama, the Gemara gives a story that Rabbi Zeira was invited to Rabbah's house, great rabbi, and Rabbah somehow slit Rabbi Zeira's neck, and Rabbi Zeira was killed because they got drunk. Well, Baruch Hashem, Rabbah had Tzichuyas. Rabbah was mispalel, and he revived Rabbi Zeira. Tchiyas amazing. The next year, he invited Rabbi Zeira back, and Rabbi Zeira said, I'd rather not come to your house because I don't know if miracles happen every year. You know, maybe you can only do it once. So some want to say that Gemara is actually proving you shouldn't paskin about drinking because, God forbid, there could be dangers. And I want to point out that, you know, there are dangers here. I mean, you know, there are kids who drive, you know, when they get drunk. I mean, unfortunately, tragically, people have been killed on board. So one has to be very, very careful about this. And obviously, nobody's talking about getting really, really drunk and sick. I mean, there'd be no mila in that. So let's explain a little bit this Indian of drinking, of reaching a certain level of simcha. And what's the connection between Baruch Hama, Mordechai and Orur Hama? Why is that the connection? So, one of the Mefarshim on the Megillah says the following idea. If we ask ourselves generally, what are we grateful for in Purim? We would always say, we're grateful that we were saved from the Gezeirah of Haman. In other words, we're grateful for what Mordechai and Esther did. We're not grateful that Haman was, that Hashem made a gezeirah that Haman was going to kill us. We're grateful because we got out of the gezeirah. In other words, there's nothing good in the gezeirah. There is only good in being extricated from the gezeirah. But in reality, that's not true. You know what the Gemara says about the gezeirah of Haman? When Ahasuerus gave Haman the authority to kill the Jewish people. So how did he give him that authority? He removed his ring and he gave it to Haman. That's the sign of royal authority. You know what the Gemara says? The removal of that ring did more good for the Jewish people than 48 Nevi'im and 7 Nevi'ot. Because all of the Nevi'im and Nevi'ot are giving Kali Yisrael Musar, 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 and nothing else. But what happens when Haman gets that ring? Everybody does tshuva. Which means, you have to understand this, it's not the pshat. There was a gezeira against us, and when we were nitzel, we're back to square one. Because if all that means is we're in the same matzah we were as before the gezeira, in a way, that's nothing to be grateful for. Why did Hashem put me through this gezeira? But rather, it's understood that we're makir toiv to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not just for the Yeshua, but even for the Yisurim and the suffering themselves. Because that brought us to Iskarvas Abore. That brought us to Kabbalah Satorah Me'ava. That brought us to Tshuva. So I want to suggest that's another element of concealment. On one hand, the concealment of Purim is everything occurred naturally. But the other aspect of concealment is to understand that even in the adversities and struggles of life, there are gifts that the Ribbono Shel Olam is giving you. That we're not just grateful for the so-called good things, but we reach a level where we even understand the challenges are for our benefit. That we grow from them. We are transformed by them. We are different because of them. The Yidden after Purim were not the same Yidden as the Yidden before Purim. There was a change, and the change came because of that Gezeirah. So this is what the Nesiva says. Baruch Mordechai represents salvation. Arur Haman represents the evil of decree. A person must reach a level of simcha so he understands that he's grateful to Hashem, not just for the Yeshua of Mordechai and Esther, but even for the difficulty of the Arur Haman. Not grateful to Haman, I don't mean that, but grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Forgiving, right? That's the idea of simcha, to understand that even the difficulties in life are a bracha. It's like, that's Gamzu L'Tova. You know, Gamzu L'Tova is not simply things will be good, but it's a deep level in which you understand that what Hashem is giving us is good. Now, again, this is a madrega. I'm not at all saying this is an easy madrega, and you know, we fail all the time, but as an aspiration, as a goal in life. Now, Rabbi Victor Miller, Zatzal, was a great Talmud Chacham and a great Mashpia, talked about the idea of trying to train our children, even at a very young age, to appreciate everything Hashem does. So he even talked about things like the weather. These are minor things. He says, you know, sometimes there's an attitude where a parent is always making bad comments about the weather. You know, if it's raining, he says, oh, it's raining, too hot, too cold. He was like saying, you know, you have to talk to your children like, Baruch Hashem, it's raining, let's go out in the rain, or it's snowing, or we have a beautiful sun, or, you know, beautiful breeze. And he says, these attitudes, even though it may sound like a game a little bit, these attitudes really affect a personality in which they look at life in a very different way. They see the brachos in things. This is a great gift. Again, it's sometimes hard to communicate if we don't have it naturally. You know, many of us don't have it naturally. And sometimes you got to play act a little bit. You got to fake it, which is not the easiest thing to do. But it really makes a difference. A child can be raised with a certain attitude. And that translates into very practical benefits. When kids are resilient in that way, you know, they don't get defeated. They don't get upset by things not going perfectly. They take it in stride. That's a very, it's a very great matana you can give a person to be able to take these things with simcha. And if we can, as parents, you know, we can try to create that type of atmosphere. I'll tell you a strange story. It's a very interesting story. His granddaughter once came to visit him in Flatbush, and she goes into the kitchen of his apartment, and she finds him standing over the kitchen sink with his head submerged in water. She had no idea what this was. She pulls him out and says, Sadie, what was going on? He says, don't worry, I was just counting to 10 and then I would lift up my head. Why were you putting your head in water? He says, I'll tell you what happened. I was taking a walk this morning in Flatbush, and my walking companion remarked that the air was polluted today. And I felt a little bad because normally I like to be makir toiv for every breath I take. But this took away some of the hana So I wanted to put myself in an environment where I would suffocate. I couldn't breathe at all, just for a short time. And then when I would come out, I would say, you know, the air isn't so bad as I thought. It's a lot better than I thought it was. Now, this is very extreme, and do not do this by yourself. It actually is dangerous. I guess it's sadik maybe is more and more bitachon. But the point is well taken, that, you know, the concept is that, you know, we're always kind of seeing how things could be better instead of appreciating how good the brachas Hashem has given us. And this is also part of the hiddenness of Purim, that even the Arur Haman is something to be makir tayyib for, and not just the Korach HaMelechim. Right? So the kitzur, these are the ideas of Purim, the eradication of Amalek by being Masakein, the Sinas Chinam and the Rifyon Yadayim, and the notion of being Makir Taif to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not just for the unusual and miraculous, but even for ordinary life, and on a deeper level, to see the Hashkacha of Hashem, even in the adversity, and even in the disappointments, and even in the frustrations, to understand that these are gifts that Hashem gives us, to make us into certain people that we otherwise would not be. You know, if you're interested in, you know, obviously in Torah literature we have many things, but I'll give you a non-Torah book that makes this point in a very, very beautiful way. Many of you might have heard of Viktor Frankl. Viktor Frankl happened to be Jewish, but not religious, but he was spiritually a very intuitive person. And he was a famous psychiatrist. He died a few years ago, and he actually was in the concentration camps. And out of his experience in the concentration camps, he developed a school of psychology called logotherapy, which is man's search for meaning. And he writes very much about the idea that adversity can sometimes bring out qualities in us that would otherwise not exist at all. He said there were people he knew before the war who were just regular people, nobody special. You wouldn't have seen them as righteous people. But in the concentration camp, they were willing to risk their lives to give bread or medicine to children, men, women, whatever. And it was their confrontation with Nisayim that brought out tremendous kochos. Ah, you'll ask me, Akasha, yeah, but I can give you 100 examples of people, you know, who became apikoros. Well, again, you know, there's an old cliche, Hashem never gives you a test that you can't pass. But I'll add to the cliche, Hashem never gives you a guaranteed pass either. In every Nisayim, we might fail. There's no guarantee in life. And I cannot sit in judgment on somebody who didn't pass the Nisayim because I don't know if I would pass the Nisayim. I can't look down at anyone. But I can say that there were people who rose to the challenge and made choices of righteousness and Kedusha and goodness. And they saw the hand of Hashem even in their adversity. They tell a story. Simon Wiesenthal used to tell the story. He was a Nazi hunter, again, not religious Jew, but he told the story of his encounter with Rabbi Eliezer Silber after the war. Rabbi Eliezer Silber was a great gadol who was living in America then. And after the war, the prisoners of the camps were put in displaced persons camps. And Rabbi Silber would visit them to give them chizuk. And he was organizing a shachris minyan. And he noticed that Wiesenthal wasn't davening. So he said to him, why don't you daven with us? So Wiesenthal said, after what I saw in the concentration camps, I don't daven anymore. So Rabbi Silber figured, you were talking about the Nazis. You saw what the Nazis did. No, not with the Nazis. I saw what a from Jew did. I saw a from Yid who smuggled a sitter into the concentration camp. And if he would be caught, they would kill him. And at first I admired him. What Mesiras Nefesh? Gavaldik. But then I noticed he was renting out the sitter to inmates for 5 minutes at a time in exchange for their daily bread. So he was using his sitter to take bread out of the mouths of men, women, and even children. And I said to myself, anybody who uses his religion to take food out of the mouths of starving people, that's a dirty religion. That's an improper religion. I want nothing to do with that. So Wiesenthal recounts, the rest of his life, he recounted Rabbi Silver's answer. Rabbi Silver said to him, you're a foolish person. You see the person who's renting out the sitter and taking the bread. Why don't you look at the people who are willing to give up their bread to have the sitter. Don't you see their goodness, their tzidkus, their mesiras nefesh? In every nisayon, there are going to be two sides of the equation. But you also look at the capacity of a person to grow great through these adversities and through these challenges. Baruch Hashem, most of us don't have challenges of concentration camps. Thank God that's not the nisayon Hashem has put. But all of us have nisayonos. All of us have challenges. Some bigger than more. We might have challenges in our marriage, challenges in raising our children, challenges in finding parnasa. Sometimes this can break us, it can depress us, it can sadden us, it can give us a lack of emuna in ourselves and a lack of emuna in Hashem, but also in ourselves. And Purim is a reminder that even in the Orer Haman, a person has to see this as an opportunity for Aliyah, not to give up, to understand that everything Hashem puts in our lives is potentially a great gift. Potentially. It's not going to happen on the mountain. The gift is not going to appear on the table. But we have the ability to make it a great gift. So, B'ez Hashem, I will always be zochah that this Purim should be a time in which we could reveal that which is hidden and see the inner reality that's beyond the masks. Thank you.